Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Just thrilled that I'm getting the day right. The days are starting to get their feel back a tiny bit. Monday Night Raw helps me, I'm going to say. I know what Mondays are because I've got my Monday TV viewing. But I know today is Tuesday, and it's good to be with all of you. And Seth Payne, as it is every day, it's nice to be with you. How are you, my friend?
It's awesome to be with you, Sean. So they had Monday Night Raw last night. You were my conduit to the world of wrestling.
Yes.
Not paying that much attention to it. So I've got a full stack of various Netflix shows and Amazon Prime to watch and everything. I can't be bothered with the real world at this moment. By 6 p.m., until genuine sports resume, you know, authentic sports, no insult to wrestling, I understand. But I'm just going to be completely in the recorded stuff world.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Allow me to be your conduit as to what day it is. Today is Tuesday, Seth. It is Tuesday.
It is a
good Tuesday because we start off with some coronavirus positivity. Major League Baseball, this came out at 11:15 last night. I didn't see it until you brought it to my attention this morning. Jeff Passan dropping a story on ESPN.com that Major League Baseball has designs to resume, not regular season play, but resume their plan to play, including a 2 to 3 week spring training period in Arizona. This is sort of the new normal in sports, Seth, at least the new proposed normal has been starting seasons with the entire leagues sequestered in places that have the functionality, at least, for them to conduct a regular season. How long they do that for, we have no idea, but Major League Baseball would conduct a spring training for 2 to 3 weeks, and then their regular season using the various facilities they have throughout the greater Phoenix area. What was your reaction when you saw this last night?
My first reaction was one of excitement because I saw on there that they said they'd be doing it with the approval of medical authorities. Now, look, you can go out and find yourself a dirty doctor that'll approve any damn thing you want. They'll prescribe you any drugs you want, but I assume these would be, you know, legitimate bona fide public health experts. And I guess, you know, as a lot of people have been saying all along, the big obstacle is getting enough testing, you know, having access to tests. And it feels like baseball, basketball, football, all these various leagues kind of are probably somewhat in the shadows, but very aggressively going after locking down some medical tests. You know, at the very least, they're staying on top of it. And as this 5-minute test comes out, there's going to be a scramble for organizations to try to grab these tests, because if they can test people aggressively and often, it looks like you don't have to necessarily quarantine everybody that came into contact with that person as long as you're aggressive with the testing. And that's where these leagues are starting to feel like, all right, one player testing positive wouldn't be a death knell to the entire team as long as we get that guy removed and keep testing everybody else. There's a way to kind of try to contain this as long as you're in a controlled environment.
Yeah, I think sports, Seth, in a way, and this story, I think, really brings it home because they've thought this through a lot. We can go through some of the bullet points of some of the changes they might make in the game in order to accommodate this world that we're living in now, in order to keep the players, and I guess more importantly, the older people associated with the game, like umpires, like the manager of the Astros, who's 70 years old, to try to keep them safe. We can go through those, but I think my broad thought on this is that this is a decision that other sports leagues are going to face, that is sort of a microcosm of what we're probably going to face as a society at some point is, what is the cost benefit of starting to get back to some degree of normalcy? This is not perfect. You know, there are people dying. I get that. But also our economy is well into the toilet at this point. And I think baseball and sports, obviously societally, you need to look at it differently because we're talking about hundreds of millions of people in crowded areas and things like that. There needs to be a lot more taken into account with society. But I think the mentality is the same, which is, okay, this isn't going to be perfect. There is a little bit of risk involved, but the cost benefit that we're looking at here says that the reward is worth the risk.
Right. And I think that's the decision you have to make in any area of public health. You know,
right.
There's always a question, okay, if we reduce speed limits everywhere to 30 miles per hour, then fewer people would die on the roads. But society accepts a certain level of risk that we also want to drive 75 at times. So likewise, with this, at some point, it's a matter of getting it to where you can control it, to where, like it is with the flu. Okay, we've grown accustomed to a certain level of risk of just being out in society and that a certain number of people are going to die from the flu every year. You have to be more careful about this one because it's just so much more aggressive. But it becomes, at this point, it's kind of like wearing a condom, Sean. If you wear a condom and because that's what social distancing is, right? Is it not? I mean, a condom was your first form of social distancing, really.
Yes, a fraction of a millimeter of social distancing.
Yes, they say, look, you need to be a little more socially distant away from this young lady, so wear a condom. And it works pretty well for the most part. But after an amount of time, you don't say like, oh, wow, the condom seems to be working. Let's just stop using the condom altogether.
That's right.
You don't do that. That's not. So likewise, the social distancing is working at this point. But you can't just say all of a sudden, well, we're going to stop doing social distancing altogether. You keep that condom on in various situations. When you're around old people, keep the condom on. When you're around people with previous medical conditions, keep the condom on. And we figure out exactly how often and where we need to wear these metaphorical condoms.
That's right. Yeah, the plan that Major League Baseball has is basically a condom plan to get baseball back on our TV screens. That's what it is.
Yes, it's like when you go.
It's the condom plan.
You know what it is? It's like when you go back to a girl's apartment and she's got a bowl of condoms, and you're like, "Game on! This is a good night." You know?
That's right.
That's what baseball is doing for you. Baseball is like, oh, okay, we've got a bowl of condoms out here for you.
Seth, you know, anytime you get a group of people together that are, in baseball that are trying to come up with a plan for something like this, they need to come up with a code name for it so they can just speak in code behind the scenes. Do you think they call this the Trojan plan? Is this the Trojan plan to get baseball back?
The Trojan horse of, it's the Trojan plan. It's the, what else? What other kinds of social distancing? On a non-dirty side, what kind of social distancing? Well, you know who had this all figured out back in the day? Where like some of the religious sects and stuff where you have to make love through a blanket and whatnot.
That's right.
Might bring that. That might come back into vogue. Like, just go ahead and, Sean, what are these young baseball players going to do when they're sequestered away for four and a half months? That's about married guys, because that's one of the big obstacles here. It's like, okay, you might be four and a half guys away from their family. Some of the younger players who are young, virile men, do you really think you're going to be able to keep them from sneaking off the reservation? I don't think so. So you're going to have areas like quarantine conjugal visit areas.
That's a legitimate look. That is the ultimate legitimate concern, right? That some outsider comes in who's got the coronavirus and infects people, and then it infects other people, and it does what it's done on the U.S. map and the map from around the world over the last few weeks. I think, Seth, I think about some of the TV people. The TV people, they're going to be, I would assume, hundreds of TV people covering this thing. Will there be media allowed? Will the beat writers of each team be allowed to go to Arizona and cover the team? Are they going to need to be tested? There have to be media people there, right? I mean, you got to cover this thing. The league, the league needs media covering this stuff. You know, there are a lot of moving parts. I'm completely enthused that a sport has that one of the sports has an aggressive plan like this, because I want sports back as badly as anybody, you know, especially I was excited for this Astros season. I want some Astros baseball. I'm not dying without it right now. We're getting by just fine, but I would love to have it if we can have it. Man, there's a lot of moving parts other than just, we got to get 30 teams out there and play ball. Yeah. So we're going to talk plenty about this throughout the show. There are a lot of angles to this for the Astros. There are a lot of angles of this to Major League Baseball. Might we get an electronic strike zone because of this? Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of stuff to get to with this. So we will continue to sprinkle this in throughout the day. In fact, let's talk about that strike zone part of it in the next segment. I've got some more coronavirus positivity to start our day. And one big thing, as we just mentioned, that we could get out of this Major League Baseball plan. We'll do that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so this is a big story, so I want to keep carrying this into the next segment. We appreciate you tuning in. If you're just waking up, a story that came down last night from Jeff Passan that Major League Baseball has a very aggressive plan to bring baseball back. And all 30 teams would be conducting a brief spring training and then begin the regular season by playing various games throughout the greater Phoenix area at the spring training facilities, including the ballpark that the Diamondbacks play in. I believe it was called Chase Field, might be bank, some bank. There's some bank that sponsors where the Diamondbacks play. Seth, the Jeff Passan article says that both sides acknowledge the uniqueness of the season would not be limited to stadium location or roster size. Among the possibilities that have been discussed among people from both sides, though not in the talks on Monday, according to sources, the very first one that jumps out at me, the implementation of an electronic strike zone to allow the plate umpire to maintain social distance, proper social distance, from the catcher and the batter. So from this virus, Major League Baseball might get something and implement something that people have been clamoring for a long, long time, taking the calling of balls and strikes off of the home plate umpire's plate, so to speak.
Yeah, and boy, I hadn't even thought about that this might actually enact some. This forces you into experimenting with some things that might end up actually being adopted. I also wonder, man, could this somehow affect the, now I'm thinking about too many things and all the different places it might go. I think the electronic strike zone, this is where experimenting with it in some of the minor leagues and independent leagues is going to pay a lot of dividends now because they have experience with that. You know, the Skeeters have experimented with this. And I think that that's a no-brainer, right? Because the older people that are on the field and around the field are the ones you need to be concerned with. So umpires tend to be a good chunk older than the actual players themselves. And then Dusty Baker and Brent Strom are the first two guys that come to mind for me. Which is another way that they've talked about using social distancing as much as possible, is the players and the managers wouldn't be in the dugout. They'd be up in the stands so they could spread out more and they wouldn't be in close quarters the whole time. And this is a little bit, I think, of how they're figuring, all right, look, as long as we keep testing everybody, if one guy tests positive, he won't have been in close immediate contact for a long period of time with a lot of guys. So there's a good chance that maybe he'll only have infected one or two people. So you just keep everybody spread out. You have the electronic strike zone as much as you can and as much as feasible. You spread all these guys out all the time and test them every day. And by that, you can minimize the spread. I wonder, do you think they'll be wearing masks while they play if they pull this off?
Seth, that is something we would have laughed at 3 weeks ago. I don't laugh at anything anymore.
No.
You know, remember when the idea of playing games without fans came up literally like a month ago at about this time? I remember the story came up when we were on our honeymoon, Amy and I, which is about a month ago, right? It's April 7th today. We were on vacation the first, second week of March. And remember LeBron James at first, when he was asked about it, thought it was a joke. Like, he's like, wait, what? Games without fans? That's going to be the norm for all I don't know if it'll be the norm for football because they've got more of a runway to get to games. I could see where the preseason games might be played. I could see where, almost as a goodwill gesture, the preseason games are played without fans and fans get their money back for those preseason games. Because that, if anything, that's the biggest complaint of season ticket holders when it comes to paying for tickets, is having to pay for preseason games. But just staying focused on baseball and I guess basketball as well, because those are the ones that are imminent right now. those games are absolutely going to be played without fans. So, Seth, your question about masks, I would have laughed at it 3 weeks ago. We probably would have done 5 minutes worth of jokes about it. I don't think it's a joke. Oh, I could see where they would do something like that or make it an option.
You think about just how much has changed. I don't remember how long ago, 2 weeks ago, you might have said, well, masks don't actually prevent the spread. And now you're like, oh, well, actually, it's all a matter of minimizing the chances. And I'm thinking of just even in baseball, there's less physical contact, obviously, than there is in basketball or football. But in those moments where there is physical contact or close proximity, if a guy is sliding into home, if both the catcher and the base runner are wearing masks, there's a lot less chance of some spittle going, you know, or getting breathed on by the other guy, or at the very least, just you're minimizing the concentration of the virus that might be transmitted. So I would imagine they'll be wearing some kind of mask when they return. And by the way, I don't know if we mentioned this, they're talking about May for this. So this is Major League Baseball returning to play in a sequestered environment in Arizona, where everybody is kind of maintaining some social distance between them as much as possible, and they're getting tested extremely aggressively. But this is May, which is, I think, a lot sooner than anybody anticipated, right?
Oh, yeah. When I woke up to the text this morning of you texting me about this story, and I had to, like, rub my eyes again. I'm like, May? And I had to look up the date. I'm like, it's April 7th. Like, May is in, you know, 3 weeks and change. Look, this is one of those things, man. As long as there are good doctors that are blessing this plan, and as long as baseball has thought of everything, let's get it going, man. Let's get it back going again. To that point, the story that came out yesterday that actually was sports related about aggressively rescheduling to get back on track was actually it was baseball later on in the evening, but golf was the first one yesterday. There was the story about the PGA is looking at mid-June to start doing tournaments again with no fans. Of all the sports that should be able to do something like this, golf is the one that should be able to do something, including they are actually trying to keep the majors going. The British Open's already been canceled, but the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, the Masters has been moved to mid-November, which means the Houston Open has been moved to early November because it's always the week before the Masters. So if you're someone who is a Houston Open enthusiast, this is the – you know, Jim Crane owns this thing now, and the Astros are the ones who tweeted out the story about it yesterday. So the two are inextricably linked. But man, Seth, how wild is the fall going to be if we've got all these postseasons of the other sports bleeding over football, the Masters in November? It's going to be bananas.
It's almost I predict this is going to be good for TV sales because I feel like people are going to if hopefully the economy has ramped back up by that point and people have the spending money. You're going to have your own little man cave to be able to watch all the stuff that's going on. There will be actual, like, relevant golf events every Sunday as football might be playing an accelerated schedule. Who knows? Baseball might be extended. You know, now, with this current plan with baseball, they're trying to play a full season. So this would also include 7-inning games on doubleheaders, an increased number of doubleheaders. The fact that they'd be playing in Arizona makes a lot of sense because you're not going to have rain delays, you know?
No rainouts.
And they're going to have to make – the question would be, though, boy, are they're going to be playing all the games. There's just many game after game after game after game with a lot of these – there's so many questions. Every time you talk about one point with this plan to return to baseball in May – like 400 other little offshoots come out of it. There's so many. Yeah. I don't know how Sean, I think that they could do this. I don't know how logistically they're going to pull it off in less than one calendar month. That part of it seems almost impossible, the timeline.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully, Seth, they've been in a room planning all these things already. Yeah, hopefully there's more of the work done than we know about already and that they've been getting ready to ramp up. But if you're just waking up, Major League Baseball with a very aggressive plan to try to resume baseball in May. Spring training for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then the regular season beginning in Arizona with all 30 teams in Arizona. Seth and I will be talking about that throughout the show. So many different bullet points and wrinkles to it. Let's circle back to some football, though, and some more good news. J.J. Watt gets another honor. In the process, did DeAndre Hopkins get jobbed? We will discuss next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Man, time flies, Seth. It seems like just yesterday the Texans were drafting J.J. Watt, and everybody was angry that they didn't draft Nick Fairley, and we'll see how this Watt kid plays out. And in the blink of an eye, yada, 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 now he's an all-decade player for the decade of 2010 through 2019. J.J. Watt among eight unanimous selections yesterday for the all-decade team. For those who don't know, the all-decade team is selected by the 48 people who pick the Hall of Fame. So if you're wondering, as if J.J. Watt had anything to worry about for the Hall of Fame, but there are some guys who maybe have fringe cases where this gives you a window into how those specific 48 people feel about them that are maybe borderline cases who made the all-decade team. We'll go through all the names on the all-decade team, but J.J. Watt is the headliner for us here. He's one of eight unanimous selections, Seth, along with Tom Brady, Adrian Peterson, Marshall Yanda, Joe Thomas, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, and Justin Tucker. A unanimous selection for all-decade kicker, who, by the way, was an undrafted free agent the same year that the Texans used a fifth-round pick on Randy Bullock. Just putting that out there.
When I first saw that, by the way, I got a little too excited because I thought I'd read Justin Tuck, where my longstanding argument is that if Eli Manning makes the Hall of Fame, then Justin Tuck should as well. Because if Eli's only going to get in because of his Super Bowl appearances, Justin Tuck was just as valuable in both those Super Bowls. He's got like six sacks in those two Super Bowls. It's not. It's Justin Tucker. Justin Tuck, not an all-decade player.
No, and Seth, I think the interesting thing about J.J. Watt, there's no shock here that J.J. Watt, and I don't think there's even shock that he's a unanimous selection. I think it shows the tour de force that when he's healthy that he's been, that he's a unanimous selection in a decade where he's missed basically 2.5 full seasons, right? He got started in 2011, so he's already not getting credit for 2010, which is part of the decade. He gets drafted in 2011. His rookie year was decent. He became J.J. Watt, the unanimous all-decade guy, in 2012 when he won his first Defensive Player of the Year. But he was a unanimous selection, having basically missed the entire season for the most part in 2016, in 2017, missed half the season in 2019. Seth, I haven't done the math. I'm looking at the other names, the other seven names that were unanimous. Other than the suspensions for Brady and the suspensions for Adrian Peterson, I'm just talking missed games for medical reasons. J.J. Watt probably missed more games than the other seven guys combined, and he's still a unanimous selection. The making the all-decade team isn't a measurement. It isn't the surprising measurement of his greatness. The unanimity in the selection is, to me, that's the measurement of how great he is.
You know, it's interesting to think if you had compressed J.J.'s career so far down to just the seasons in which he was healthy, he would have... You know what? If you had compressed his career to where, let's say he played, let's see, his complete healthy seasons were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's had 6 seasons. What if J.J. played 6 seasons, got those 3 defensive players of the year, and then retired because he had some cataclysmic injury or something, or he just got sick of playing football? He'd be a Hall of Famer, right? Just based off those 6 seasons. Just because anybody, look, there's only 2 people that have ever gotten 3 defensive players of the year. That right there is just enough to basically catapult you forward. But it is, if you get rid of those injured seasons over these last few years, he's had a relatively short career. It's been 6 seasons of absolute dominance and 3 seasons of frustration.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably feels longer to people because he's still, even when he's been injured, he's been visible, you know, maybe not in season. He'd show up on the sidelines late in the season sometimes, but he's just such a big personality, and he's done so many things off the field, right, Seth? I mean, he's hosted the Country Music Awards. He's raised millions of dollars for hurricane victims, along with several other charitable endeavors. He's omnipresent. You know what I mean? It's not just the football part. He is one of the faces of the league. He is a personality of the league.
I wonder how he feels about that Country Music Awards. This is what I've noticed about these awards shows. They tend to rope these guys in when they're still pretty young. Remember LeBron hosted the ESPYs, did he not?
Yes, he did.
A rookie or in his second year. It was like he was really, really young. And then I wonder, that's a hard gig, man. It's hard to pull that off. J.J. did a good job of it, though, right?
I think he did. No, I remember. I don't remember being critical about it. I don't know if he was an A-plus or a B-plus or whatever. He was on Saturday Night Live 2 months ago. He was fine. Different. He did a good job.
Saturday Night Live, I feel, is different because the only part you're actually hosting is like a 2-minute monologue at the beginning.
Yeah.
You're not going in and out and doing like carrying the whole show on your shoulders.
That's true.
Look, Dander Hafkins got screwed in this deal.
And he got screwed.
Big time. Big time. Because I think the people that voted on this didn't realize, oh, this is of the decade. We're not counting Larry Fitzgerald in the 2000 through 2009 seasons. We're supposed to start in 2010. But it feels like they took Larry Fitzgerald's career and figured, well, he kind of got screwed because he straddled that 2010 mark. Like his really good career was just before and just after that mark. So they almost gave him credit for what he did in the previous decade. But that's not what this is. This is the player of this decade. And DeAndre Hopkins has been better than Larry Fitzgerald.
He's been better than Larry Fitzgerald. It's not like Fitzgerald played for the Patriots or something where he had a bunch of big catches in the postseason. He played for the Cardinals. They barely made the postseason. They were kind of they're the Texans of the NFC, basically, right? Like they make the postseason 3 or 4 times maybe in this decade. And just Seth, just to put some data on this, Larry Fitzgerald in the decade of 2010 through 2019 made the All-Pro team one time, and it was second team, and it was in 2011. DeAndre Hopkins made it second team in 2015, and then he's been first team each of the last 3 seasons, which last I checked, all take place in the decade of 2010 through 2019. One other bit of data, DeAndre Hopkins in the decade of 2010 through 2019 has just 1,400 fewer receiving yards and 7 fewer touchdowns than Larry Fitzgerald, who had a 3-season head start on him. So yeah. DeAndre Hopkins' numbers are almost right there with Larry Fitzgerald, just the pure counting numbers. Not to mention the fact that just the per-game numbers, DeAndre Hopkins is a more explosive player, more yards per catch. I know DeAndre Hopkins isn't on the Texans anymore, but he's certainly somebody who we've learned in the last 3 weeks is one of the most beloved players in franchise history. He got royally screwed in this thing.
You know what, man? Boy, talk about new realities setting in. I swear, I knew we were going to do this last night, this topic, and I knew this morning, and as I was walking around thinking about the show, that we were going to do this topic. That entire time, I was thinking about DeAndre Hopkins as a Houston Texan. Actually talking about the DeAndre Hopkins trade earlier this morning with somebody, with Ross Tucker, actually. I was going back and forth with Ross Tucker. When it came to this topic, I'm thinking of DeAndre Hopkins as a current Texan. And it kind of is. It's worth it because in that decade, it was DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald and the Cardinals were in the Super Bowl in 2008. And I really feel like he's getting credit. I wonder was Larry Fitzgerald on the all-decade team in the 2000s? Because maybe it's a little bit of a makeup for that. They look at this all-decade team as a little bit of almost a rubber stamp for the Hall of Fame. Maybe and recognize it. But now I'm worried that DeAndre Hopkins will get definitely screwed because he'll only have a few years potentially of being in his true prime here in the 2020s. And maybe he's left off the 2020 all-decade team.
I think it needs to be pointed out too, Seth, with this Fitzgerald thing. And Seth and I are going through the all-decade team that was named yesterday. I think it's worth pointing out, Larry Fitzgerald's dad is a sports writer. These are all sports writers and sports media people picking the Hall of Fame thing. John McClain's one of them. And I'm not saying there's a lack of integrity in the selection. These are all subjective things where all sorts of biases begin to set in. And Larry Fitzgerald is one of the great guys in the NFL. Like, I don't want to take that away from him. He's a great human being. I've interviewed him at the Super Bowl a couple times. Could not have been a more considerate, thoughtful football player that has sat down in that seat with us on Radio Row. But this is based on performance on the football field. I mean, the Hall of Fame people love to wave that in your face about how, nope, this is all about stuff on the field. You could murder somebody and you're still supposed to. I don't know why I'm slightly channeling John McClain a little bit. I don't mean to pick on John, but he's the face of those 48 people because we know him. Yeah. We'll be able to ask him. We'll be able to ask him tomorrow about this. He'll be on with us in the 8 o'clock hour. There's just no explanation for Hopkins not being on there and Fitzgerald being on there above him.
They claim it's all about what goes on the field until it comes to Terrell Owens. And then it's, but it's some of it's off the field as well.
It's kind of on the field. The locker room's part of the field.
Larry, how often does OJ get invited to those Hall of Fame ceremonies?
I don't know. That's a good question.
He's still in it, right?
He's still in the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
So Larry Fitzgerald, for one, let's stack these up even in other categories. All right, Clemson versus University of Phoenix. All right, no contest there. DeAndre Hopkins. Hey, do you ever wonder, because Larry Fitzgerald actually went to Pitt. Do you think Pitt people are ever like, all right, Larry, just cool it with the University of Phoenix stuff, you know? Like, well, the University of Pittsburgh has not had an incredible run in their athletics since the 1970s and early 80s, perhaps. And you'd feel like Larry Fitzgerald is at least one guy that they could be proud of. But every time you see him on TV or on radio, he's talking about the University of Phoenix.
Or do you think that now that the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center is the one that may have stumbled onto a vaccine for the coronavirus, that Larry Fitzgerald's going to jump back on the Pitt bandwagon? Like, all of a sudden he's going to be doing online education ads for the University of Pittsburgh at halftime of Monday Night Football now?
You know what that's going to be like? That'll be like when Charlton Heston all of a sudden was a huge Northwestern football fan. When Northwestern got good, remember in the 90s, Northwestern got good, and all of a sudden Charlton Heston was like, go Wildcats. Like, you haven't talked about Northwestern football in decades.
Yep. That's funny.
Poor Charlton Heston. He had two different things. One was he had that, which I always was skeptical, like, what, Charlton Heston? Now I'm hearing about Northwestern football. But then also, remember, Michael Moore interviewed the poor old guy. By that point, he was a senile old man, and Michael Moore is, like, giving gotcha questions to him about the NRA.
Two former Texans, other former Texans, actually did make the All-Decade team. Shane Leckler, no surprise there. He actually made it in the previous decade as well. So he's a two-time All-Decade punter. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame someday. Seth, what did you think about Tyrann Mathieu making it as a, quote, defensive back? They had several cornerbacks make the team, and then they have a spot. It's almost like the flex position for defense, right? Yeah. They have that flex position on offense with which Darren Sproles got that for the offensive side of the ball, the All-Decade stuff. But Tyrann Mathieu and Chris Harris of the Chargers, formerly of the Broncos, both getting All-Decade honors for defensive back. What did you think of Mathieu making it?
I was surprised there. And again, almost just because of I guess his few seasons before his injury were just so brilliant and shined so bright that it was that makes sense. I don't know. Like, I guess the big question is always who was snubbed if Mathieu made it that shouldn't have been on it?
Yeah. I don't know, but if you had given me some sort of poll or some sort of wager before this got named, which one's going to get named, DeAndre Hopkins or Tyrann Mathieu beforehand, you know, and if neither of them get named, you get your money back, that kind of thing. DeAndre Hopkins would have been a massive favorite to me. He would have been like minus 500 and Tyrann Mathieu would have been like plus 300, you know, 3-1 to make it, that kind of thing. Like, when I saw Tyrann Matthew's name, I'm like, he's had two great seasons. And other than that, he's been injured the whole decade. You know, he's been injured or he's been a rookie.
The thing that it made me, I guess Darrell Revis didn't make this. And it made me at first think,
no,
like,
he did.
Wow, he did. Okay. Well, I don't.
He's one of the corner. Yeah. The three cornerbacks are Darrell Revis, Patrick Peterson, and Richard Sherman. The three safeties are Eric Berry, Earl Thomas, and Eric Weddle. And then they have two defensive backs, which makes sense to have that position, Seth, because so many teams, the base defense doesn't exist anymore. So many teams' base defense is nickel now because of how the passing game has just inundated the NFL. So I'm cool with having that category. I'm just surprised Tyrann Mathieu made it. I guess I'm kind of doing what I criticize people for doing right now when they say, fire this guy. Because I always say, well, okay, fire this guy, but tell me who your replacement's going to be. In some ways, I'm going, man, I'm not sure he deserves it, but I don't have a list of defensive backs. I didn't take the time to go through all the defensive backs of the last decade to know who should make it more than Tyrann Mathieu. I'm just surprised he made it because he wasn't available all that much during he didn't play that much football in the decade.
So these are the guys that either played for the Texans or could have played for the Texans. We have Shane Leckler.
Ooh.
So Shane Leckler, who at least part of that decade and part of that brilliance was with the Houston Texans. Most of his really, really good work, obviously, was done with the Raiders. But Shane Leckler will remain in the area, you know, because his family's from here. You're going to run into him out there hunting and fishing at various places. So that's cool. I feel like he's a definite Texan that he's on there. So I feel good about that one. Chris Harris Jr. could have been here as an aging player because he was a free agent this year, but that obviously wasn't any of the work that he did. So J.J. Watt will be the one you can really hang your hat on that wasn't a surprise, obviously did all his work with the Texans, and there you go.
Seth, let me give you one. This is where I thought you were going, where you were saying guys who could have been Texans. Another player who became a two-time all-decade performer, Julius Peppers, who could have been your teammate back in 2002 if the Texans had decided to go defensive end instead of franchise quarterback in the 2002 draft. Julius Peppers. I know Julius Peppers is one that was getting a lot of traction on Texans Twitter yesterday when he was named.
Well, I mean, at what point would Bill O'Brien have traded him away, though? That's always the question.
Good point.
Luckily, I don't think Kubiak would have traded him away. I don't think Rick Smith would have traded him away. And then by the time Bill O'Brien got his GM duties, obviously Julius Peppers had already changed teams and everything, so that wouldn't have been a big deal. Khalil Mack is another guy that made the all-decade team. That
could have been a Texan.
Yeah, and boy, I feel like I'm getting old now, don't I? I'm like, Khalil Mack, all decade. He's only been in the league like 2 years. Clowney's just a pup, right? No, they've been around a while.
Nope, 6 years. 6 years.
I mean, obviously, a lot of these guys could have been Texans, but there was a decision made at various points not to take these guys in the draft that make you wonder, oh, all right, this might have gone differently if we had taken these guys.
All right, Seth, here's my question. Is Nick Martin going to get a raise because Zach Martin made the all-decade team?
Yeah, is Nick Martin the Eli Manning of the interior offensive line world? I feel like he is a little bit, right? I feel like Nick Martin almost, in some area in Bill O'Brien's mind, do you think he was like, hey, he's got a good pedigree.
Yes!
Family.
I think that's look, this is not to pick on Nick Martin. I'm guessing that that's something that goes into the evaluation of any younger brother of a good player, which is, hey man, hopefully he's got something of what makes his brother so good. I absolutely think, and I don't even fault teams for thinking that way.
With genetics,
it's as reliable as anything else that they come up with to evaluate these guys.
Yeah, and you think, look at Justin Reed. You know, obviously Justin Reed spent time with his older brother because they're both in the Bay Area, actually breaking down film and seeing how it works in the NFL and seeing how the 49ers did it while his brother was playing for the 49ers. And yeah, you would assume the nice thing about a younger brother is that they're usually working out with their older brother while they're still in college, so they really see what goes on in the offseason versus a lot of college kids that they've had that regimented life where they're working out just with the team, and some of them aren't that they're responsible away from the field, where at least Zach Martin saw that growing up.
Yeah. Yep. So we're looking at the all-decade team. Seth, one of the wide receivers who made it, deservedly so, ahead of DeAndre Hopkins, was Antonio Brown, who had the most first-team all-pro berths in the decade. He was named first-team all-pro 4 times. Did you see that he's hiring a new agent? Antonio Brown is still trying to get back into the league, man. Like, I don't know if he's going about it the best way, but the dude wants to play football again, it seems.
Yeah, he hired a new agent, and it's not just an agent, it's an agency, and it's called EMG. So I thought to myself, wow, what kind of agency is looking to take on a headache like Antonio Brown? So I went to their homepage, and featured front and center on their homepage is one of their clients, a Houston Texan, according to this website, Julian Davenport, a man who was traded last August, is here. Julian Davenport, offensive tackle for the Houston Texans, alongside also Nate Stupar, a linebacker currently for the Giants, who's played for like 8 different teams in the last 5 years, and Naheem Hines, the running back for the Indianapolis Colts. But yeah,
Naheem Hines.
Yeah, I like him. But the fact that Julian Davenport is featured front and center in a Texans uniform makes me feel like this agency might not be all that on top of things. That's one of their marquee clients.
That's incredible. I'm looking at the page now. I clicked on it now, Seth, and there he is. You're right. Julian in a Texans uniform, front and center. He played a whole season for the Dolphins last year. There he is in a Texans uniform. If anything, EMG needs a new web guy just to at least get the graphics updated. But you know what? We joke about this, but this is probably an indicator of where Antonio Brown is at this point. My guess is that the prominent agencies have no time for a headache like Antonio Brown. Seth, think about think about how public Drew Rosenhaus is as an agent for a second. Now, I'm bringing this up because for those who don't know, that was Antonio Brown's previous agent, was Drew Rosenhaus. Think about how proportionally over the last 2 years you saw Drew Rosenhaus, a very public agent, percentage-wise spending time on Antonio Brown. Drew Rosenhaus is a guy who will get – he'll get camera time if it's a fourth-round pick that he's representing going into the draft. He'll do an interview on ESPN. Drew Rosenhaus is a pub hound who loves the spotlight. And yet 90% of the time we saw him in the spotlight, it was with Antonio Brown. And I say that to point out that he was – Drew Rosenhaus had to fire Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown did not fire Drew Rosenhaus. Drew Rosenhaus fired Antonio Brown as a client. So this is probably an indicator of where he is, that he's got to go with one of these desperate agencies that represents a bunch of mid and late round picks. And there's nothing wrong with mid and late round picks. I'm just saying that if you're a fledgling agency, those are typically the guys that you're having to get. And you hope that one of them hits and becomes a lotto ticket for you in an entree to other players. None of the big agencies want to deal with the headache that's Antonio Brown, mostly because he's probably not going to pay off. What team's going to sign him? You get paid on commission for signing bonuses and whatnot. The guy didn't sign, you don't get anything.
Well, not to mention, you have to actually get paid by Antonio Brown, which is a whole headache unto itself. We've seen this. Antonio Brown has an illustrious history of just simply not paying people. He didn't pay that chef, remember? Because they thought that the chef had left behind some fish, and the guys opened up the freezer and saw fish heads and thought that was like a sign from the mob or something. Didn't pay that moving guy. Didn't pay the artist that did that he commissioned artwork from. And I'm guessing it's hard to collect payment from Antonio as an agent.
Let me ask you this. This is something I've always wondered. Do the fees that you pay to your agent, you know, what the commission's, what, 2, 3, 4%, something like that? Does that come directly out of your pay? Is it garnished from your paycheck, or is that something that you pay the agent, you give him a 1099 or something like that?
Well, I don't know. I always,
from what you remember.
I always wrote like a paper check back in the day, but I don't remember. My agent would send me a bill and I would write a paper check and send it to him. I wonder today if that's still common. And I don't know if that was, I would imagine with some clients, you try to make an arrangement where you garnish their wages.
This one for sure.
If it's voluntary. Yeah. By the way, you don't mind if we auto debit that from your employer, right?
Right.
So
I don't think that's out of hand to ask Antonio Brown to do that.
No, not at all. But it always, man, that was the time. If you're an agent, that's the other side of it too, is you don't want your client sitting down and having to write that check or like arrange the transfer, because that's where you really think like, wow, these fees are pretty damn expensive that I'm paying this guy, huh? You want it to be out of sight, out of mind. You want him to just feel like, oh yeah, okay, that's just the cost of doing business.
Right. Like FICA or, health insurance, things like, I don't want what I'm putting into my 401k, all of those things. Like, I just tell me what the check looks like at the very end. I don't want to know all the things. I don't want to know where all this stuff's going. I'll get depressed.
You know what the big thing that happens is this time of year, especially, a lot of agents are giving advances to players. If they have a marquee client, they might say, all right, look, hey, I'm going to buy you this car, but you know, it's a loan. You owe me the money after you get your signing bonus. And then there's always that small percentage of players who don't understand it or don't believe it. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, my agent said he was going to take care of me, but now he wants me to pay for this Escalade.
Right. Yeah. Well, Seth, that's probably turned up even more this draft season with these rookies, because my guess is there's like the rest of the country, there's a decent percentage of them that are whose parents are having trouble paying bills, keeping the light on, paying rent, things like that. There's probably a lot of agents that have the normal budgeted amount of expenditure for their draft picks, for personal trainers, you know, down payment on a car, things like that. It's probably augmented this offseason, if I had to guess, because of the pandemic that we're in right now.
Yeah, not to mention just anybody. Boy, the guys that left school early and aren't going to be better than third or fourth or fifth round picks that are just now are probably really scraping by and wondering what's going to go on. It's like every other topic with this pandemic. Every time you talk about something, it raises 10 other questions.
Yep. All right. Radio.com app, radio.com rewind, smart speakers, streaming on our website, sportsradio610.com. Those are all ways you can listen to the show, especially the radio.com app. I can't recommend it more highly. If you're someone who listens in the car, but you know pretty soon you're going to be streaming us on your phone, download that app. It's great. It podcasts all the shows. You can rewind the show in the middle of it. If you miss something, you can go back and listen to it. As we head into the 7 o'clock hour, best intentions don't always mean success. The NFL is about to rectify, it would appear, one of their biggest blunders in a long time. We'll tell you what it is next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.